In the first hour today, we'll be talking a little bit about recent trends in religious belief and practice in the United States. Now, there are some people who believe that America is in the middle of a religious revival. At the same time, there are other people who make the counter-argument. They say that we're actually experiencing a religious decline. Which of these is true? Well, according to our guest for this first hour, Duke University sociologist Mark Chaves, he says, in fact, both of those viewpoints are wrong. Now, that doesn't mean that there has been no change at all. The change is significant but subtle, and we'll talk about that. One thing that hasn't changed is that Americans tend to be very religious compared with people of other countries. And that high level of both belief and practice is something that seems to have characterized American society virtually from its beginnings. In this part of Focus 580, we'll talk a little bit about continuity and change in American religion with our guest, Mark Chaves. He's professor of sociology, religion, and divinity at Duke University and specializes in the sociology of religion. Among other projects, he directs the National Congregations Study. That is a wide-ranging survey of a nationally representative sample of religious congregations. And he's joining us this morning from Duke. And we're really pleased that he could be with us to talk. A question? Comments are certainly welcome. The only thing that we ask of people who are calling in is that they try to keep their questions and comments brief so we can keep our program moving along and get in as many different people as possible. But certainly, folks who are listening are welcome to join the conversation. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point here, if you have questions, you're certainly welcome to call. Well, Professor Chaves, hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, we appreciate you giving us some of your time. It's interesting here because I think that maybe people are looking for or expecting dramatic change. And as I said, things have changed. There have been changes that are noteworthy, and we can talk about those. But I suppose that some people might be a little disappointed by a headline that says, big news, no change. But in fact, that really is the I suppose that is the headline. And so then one might ask, well, what does that really tell you? Is that news that there is no change? Well, is that news that there is no change?
Well, I think it is news depending on whether you are starting with the assumption that there ought to have been dramatic change or not. But it's exactly right to start by saying that there's tremendous continuity in American religion. Large numbers of people, depending on how you ask the question, between 65% and 95% of people believe in God. Large numbers of people pray and read the Bible and believe in heaven and hell, and these numbers have not much changed over for as long as we've been measuring them, a lot of them. So there are changes, but the changes that are occurring do need to be seen against this backdrop of substantial continuity in American religious belief and practice.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it is that this question, what Americans believe, how many believe, how that has changed over time, why it is that those questions interest us so much?
Well, religion is connected to other parts of what we believe and do, to politics, for example, and to other kinds of values. And I think a lot of interest in religion, it is connected to interest in other kinds of things that religion is connected to, like politics, for example, or like other kinds of debates about moral issues. And so sometimes interest in religion gets generated kind of derivatively by interest in other aspects of American society and culture. But also there's just a fair amount of interest in religion itself. For a long time, I think the conventional wisdom, at least among certain kinds of I don't know, intellectuals and cultural elites has been that religion would disappear, as we got more urban and as we got more industrialized and got scientifically more sophisticated. I think there was, for a large part of the 20th century, a conventional wisdom would have been, well, religion is going to go away. It will, you may be slow decline, but it will go away. And we don't think that anymore, but it's clear now that that's not the case. But that is maybe still a point worth making, that the long expected demise of religious belief and practice in a modern society like ours is not happening.
Mm-hmm. And I do think it's interesting that you've touched on this already, but particularly given the fact that from time to time, if there seem to be peaks of religious activity, that gets our attention. And it may in fact not be the fact that there are peaks in or big upswings in the number of people who say they believe in God, for example, that may be particular denominations or particular styles of worship, or indeed, as you say, connections between particular denominations and political viewpoints and political activity. Those kinds of things get our attention. But I do think it's striking, as you say, that it appears that if you look at as far back as we have good data, and it doesn't go back to the earliest parts of America, but that we do, in fact, going back to the earliest parts of America, have some feeling about how many people believe in God and how many people regularly attended some kind of religious service, and that you can see over that time very, very stable numbers in terms of percentages of the population that did believe and that did wherever they went, whatever their place of worship went, that they did say that they went regularly, or we have good evidence to believe that people did go regularly. And that's something that does really seem to be striking, that pretty much as far back in America as you can look, it doesn't really seem to have changed very much. And compared to a lot of other places, the levels are quite high.
Yes, both of those points are exactly right. And I think it's just a very important context for a discussion about what is changing to recognize that we shouldn't overstate the changes and be overdramatic about them because of this context of tremendous continuity.
Well, I want to talk about some of the changes, and I must freely admit that we stole the title that we put on the program today from a paper that you authored, looking at changes, continuity and change in American religion, and this looks at the period from 1972 to 2006. But I'm sure that more recently we see the trends can continue to be borne out more recently, and you look at a number of trends, and we can talk a little bit about all of these things that I think are very interesting and very striking, beginning with the first, that what you see is what we have seen is increased diversity in American religion. That is, we've gone to a point where I suppose primarily Americans were Christians, and among them primarily those were Protestants, that in fact we now see a much greater range of religious affiliation than ever before.
Yes, that's right. The United States is, of course, still overwhelmingly Christian. Not so overwhelmingly Protestant as it used to be. We are right around there's a long-term decline in the proportion of Americans who claim a Protestant identity. We're right around 50%. Any minute now we'll pass under 50% for the first time in American history. Less than half of people will be self-identified Protestants. And so that's an interesting long-term trend. There's increase in partly driven by recent immigration. There are increases. The percentage of non-Christians and non-Jews, that is Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, is still very small in American society as a whole. It's on the order of 3% of those groups combined, that is Muslim, Hindus, Buddhists. But that's up from under 1% 20 years ago. And so that number has gone up. That most immigrants, recent immigrants, are, of course, Christian. So another kind of diversity that's shaping American religion is increasing ethnic diversity within Christianity. So more and more churches have some Latino presence or Asian presence. Fewer churches are 100% white. And so the recent immigration is both increasing religious diversity in the sense of there's more non-Christians and non-Jews in American society than there used to be, but it's also increasing ethnic diversity within American within American Christianity. And then another piece of increasing diversity is just across the religious, not religious divide in a way that this is one of the most interesting trends that's very well established. And that is that there's a steadily, slowly, but steadily increasing percentage of people who have no religion and who say they have no religion when you ask them, what is your religion? That number is somewhere, it's probably somewhere between 15 and 20% right now. In the 1950s, we did have a survey that asked this then that we can compare was 3%. And that number has been kind of steadily creeping up for the last 40, 50 years. And it's still small. You know, it still means that 85% of Americans claim a religious identity, but it's going up, and I think it's going to continue to creep up for the foreseeable future.
And I wonder there, and this I'm sure this would be a difficult thing to get at, but whether it also now perhaps people feel that it is more acceptable to say that you don't believe than in the past. That in the past, maybe in response to that kind of question, people might have hedged a little bit more just because they would have been concerned about what people would think of them. Do you think that it is the case that it is and perhaps less stigmatizing or less problematic, unless maybe you're running for public office, for a person to say that they were an atheist, for example?
Yes, I think that is part of the dynamic. Just because you mentioned that, an interesting fact is there's a set of questions that survey researchers have asked for a while saying, would you vote for such and such a person if they were running for president, if they were otherwise qualified? And one of the things people have asked over time is, would you vote for an atheist for president if that person was otherwise qualified? And the percent who say yes to that question, it's still on the low side. It's on the order of 50%, I believe. But that's gone up over time. But yes, I do think this is there's an increase. Part of, I think, actually increasing religious diversity over the long time is an increasing tolerance for religious diversity and even respect for other religions. 3/4 of Americans now say that a religion other than my own can offer a true path to God. 3/4. Now, that varies within different religious traditions, but overall, 3/4 of people will say that now. And so I do think there's been a cultural, a long-term increase in our certainly tolerance and, you know, if you were wanted to be optimistic, maybe even appreciation of religious diversity in other people's religions.
Yeah. Something else that, though, I think is striking and perhaps not surprising, given how people think about authority figures in society across the board, is that there also seems to be, again, this is maybe small, but it's there, reflected a feeling among religious people of some lessening of respect for religious authorities as well.
Yes, that I think that's right. The this is hard to tease out because, as you noted, there's a long-term decline in Americans' confidence in institutions in general, and so part of the decline in Americans' confidence in organized religion or in religious institutions is not specific to religion. It is partakes of this broader decline since the 1970s in confidence in institutions in general. However, it does appear that Americans' confidence in religious institutions and the leaders of organized religion has declined more quickly than confidence in leaders of other kinds of institutions. So I think religious leaders and religious institutions have lost some ground relative to other kinds of institutions in the overall confidence that people feel in them.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Mark Chase. He is a professor of sociology, religion, and divinity at Duke University. He specializes in the sociology of religion. We're talking about American religious practice and belief, how things have changed and, in a larger sense, not changed over time. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I'm sure we'll probably get to some other points in talking about change, but something else that I think seems to emerge from the kind of data that you've collected is if you ask something like, well, what are the forces that drive change like this? It seems that one of them has to be demographics in the sense that if you compare the attitudes on a lot of things, including belief and attendance at services and the way people worship and how they feel about the Bible and how they feel about the most hot-button issues of the day, there seems to be a fairly significant difference and it breaks down according to age. That is, younger people tend to be a little bit looser and more flexible in their attitudes than older people do.
Yes, I think that's right. One of the interesting, though subtle, kinds of questions to ask when you see a trend over time is, well, are people actually changing their minds about something, or is no one changing their mind, but more younger people think differently than older people? And so as older people die and are replaced in the population by younger cohorts, you can get long-term trend in attitudes and values and behaviors, even if no individual actually ever changes what they believe or do over the course of a lifetime. And so with trends in religion, one is often, with trends in general, social trends, a question we'll often ask is this what we call cohort replacement driving this, or is it people changing their minds? And usually it's some of both, and it's a matter of parsing that out. But I think in religion, a lot of the change that we see is cohort replacement is a big part of it. For example, there's a long-term, again, not dramatic, but a long-term steady decline in the percent of Americans who say that they believe the Bible is inerrant, the inerrant word of God. It was on the order of 40-ish percent 30 years ago, and it's on the order of 30% today, a 10 percentage point decline over 30 years. Not huge, but very noticeable, clearly there. And it seems that is largely driven by cohort replacement. That's very strongly correlated with age. So you can get long-term slow but long-term social change through cohort replacement if generations are different from each other, even if nobody ever changes their mind about anything.
Is it the case that if you compare someone who was raised in a family where religion was very important, where the family regularly attended services together, and that was the kind of thing that was stressed in the household. You compare someone like that with someone who didn't particularly grow up in a household that identified as strongly religious, but then as an adult became involved in church. Is there any way to compare the kind of commitment or the kind of attitudes of those two sorts of individuals? And I suppose one of the things that I wonder is whether that person that was raised in that very religious family where church going was stressed has any stronger kind of commitment than that person who maybe didn't grow up in a family like that and came to their faith when they were an adult.
Mm-hmm. If people we can do comparisons like that. I don't think I'm prepared to say that I think the results of those kinds of analysis are often not completely straightforward. That is, for some kinds of religion, adult converts might be more committed than people raised in them. For other kinds of religion, it goes the other way. So I think the patterns there are more complex than I'm prepared to summarize at the moment.
I understand that, and I'm sure that individuals, we would have to give something to individual differences and differences and say, well, different people are different, and their attitudes and their experience are going to be different, and that indeed may be something where it's not that easy to draw a sweeping kind of conclusion.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
Well, look, we have a caller here. Why don't we bring them into the conversation? Bloomington, Indiana, line number 4, our toll-free line. Hello.
Hi. It seems to me that in modern years, American, they're still quite religious, but their theology is much more superficial. When I was young, when I was just a kid, our families, we would discuss theology. Americans discussed theology a great deal. The town drunk could talk about sanctification or the security of the believer. But nowadays, most Americans wouldn't even recognize those terms, and because our theology is so superficial, our faith is shallow. Most Americans can't defend their faith. But what do you think?
Yes, I think there's some truth to that. There is some evidence that religious knowledge, say, has declined. I mentioned before that 3/4 of Americans would now say that there's paths to God other than one's own religion. There is declining belief in the an inerrant Bible. I think there is a sense in which the content of religion and religious belief has shifted over time, even in the context of broad stability and basic or even vague beliefs in God, say. I don't know if I'd use personally the word superficial about it. You know, I guess that depends on what you think about the various points of theological content and so on. But I think it is accurate to say that there is a shift in the content of religious belief. Now, having said that, I want to qualify it. Surveys from the 1950s and 60s make clear that large percentages of Americans, even then, of church-going people then, couldn't name all 4 Gospels or something like that. So I don't think we want to overstate the amount of religious knowledge at previous points in time, and it's sometimes hard to nail all this down unless you've asked the exact same questions about the exact same points of religious knowledge over time. But I do think there is something to the cultural shift that you described.
Well, let me give you an example of what I'm thinking of. We have a militant atheist movement recently. And one of the militant atheists is Richard Dawkins. What he has said is, there is no evidence for God. I don't think he could have gotten by with that when I was a kid. Take Christopher, his name is Hitchens. He has said the crucifixion was child abuse. Jesus was the Son of God, so therefore when he was crucified by the will of God, that was child abuse. He definitely couldn't have gotten by with that. I mean, good grief. Here is Jesus, the second person of the Trinity. He is a son, but he's not a child. He is the second person of the Trinity. That's not child abuse. People couldn't get by with the type of arguments that they are making, which stymie Christians these days.
Well, debates between atheists and religious people are ancient, and so I guess it depends what you mean by couldn't get by with them. There's nothing new about arguing about whether there's good reason to believe in God or not. So I'm not sure that the nature of those debates I think probably the nature of those debates is something that there's a lot of continuity on it, and for a lot longer than 30 or 40 years.
I need to jump in here. I appreciate the comments of the caller. We're already at our midpoint here, and I've got some other people. I I would actually like to ask, if it is the case, as the caller suggests, and you seem to be agreeing, that perhaps among people who identify themselves as believers and of whatever background, if they have a poor grasp of key religious doctrine, why would that be the case? I mean, one could imagine that it might just be that people spend less time in formal religious instruction than they had in the past. And maybe, you know, people aren't going to Sunday school, and maybe they aren't getting that in, they aren't going to religious schools, or they aren't getting that there. Maybe it's just not the kind of thing that people talk about. How, if that is the case, how would you explain that?
Yes, that is how I'd explain it, is through a shift in the our religious institutions and the prevalence of Sunday school and shifts in family. The rising over this 30, 40 years, rising divorce rates and the presence of more and more families without two parents in them, I think really changes the ability for generations to transmit, it changes the capacity for religious transmission across generations. And we know that you had mentioned age before as one of the real strong correlates with religious belief and practice. And another one is whether you're part of a quote-unquote traditional family, two parents and kids in the household. Those kinds of households are much more likely to be religiously active than other kinds of households. And so the rising divorce rates, also the delaying of marriage that we see in more recent cohorts of people, that is more and more people getting married later in life, these two things together mean that we have many fewer households, proportionally fewer households of this sort, and more kids who grow up, of course, in those households. And I think that household structure has a big effect on so even if the parents are themselves religious, and I think it's more difficult to pass that on if the family is not intact.
Our guest,
so that's another point, another dynamic I'd call attention to.
Well, our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Mark Chaves. He is professor of sociology, religion, and divinity at Duke University. He specializes in the sociology of religion, and most of his research is on the social organization of religion in the United States. And among other projects, he directs the National Congregations Study. That is a wide-ranging survey of a nationally representative sample of religious congregations. We're talking about how things both have changed over the last few decades in American religion and how they have not. Questions welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. We have another caller here, someone in Champaign County here where we are, and that's line one. Hello.
Hi. The last questioner sort of set the stage for this question. I saw a recent report, I think it was an AP report, on Catholic guilt, actually. It was written by an Israeli-American guy, but and he promises a Jewish guilt column soon, too. But our study actually is coming up. But one of the things he said was that younger Catholics are not informed. They don't know their catechism. They can't believe, perhaps, that, you know, birth control is actually verboten. And they just don't understand all of the prohibitions. So they're consequently encumbered with less guilt than past generations. I don't know, that's kind of a very specific thing. I have a more general question, though. I guess it does talk about guilt. I wanted you to, are you looking at this historically, too? Because I think the Great Awakening, before the Civil War, I've at least seen one argument that the sort of the sexual repression and the repression of the Great Awakening sort of set the stage for the Civil War. That's a different reading. Most people say the Great Awakening was just that, a Great Awakening, but it included, among other things, a surgical solution to masturbation, where a silver wire was put through the foreskin to prevent anything going on. I'm hoping that's not terribly... I don't know how you... well, anyway, how do you respond to some of those kind of things?
One of the limits of what I do as a sociologist is that I tend to focus on the more recent period only because it's the period that we have more systematic kinds of tracking of change over time. It's, of course, much more difficult the further back in time you go before we had scientific surveys. So I'm embarrassingly when I talk to historians, I'm not able to I mainly say I don't know.
Okay, well, I'll try another question. Like I did hear that the Pew study on religion said that there seems to have been an increase in shopping around, that one of the things that U.S. has is this high church-going population, but the figure on how many people are not in the same church they were raised in, I don't know if you can break that up into who's leaving which churches, and I assume the evangelical movement is... a lot of that, and maybe some of the Latino moving to evangelical Christianity is would pack that in a little bit. But is there something you can say about that?
Yes, I'm not sure that has much changed. American religion is always there's always been a lot of mobility in American religion. That is, people shifting, especially within Protestantism, across Protestant denominations, and that. Recent report that you're referring to was excellent at nailing down what the rates of that kind of thing is at the moment. But it wasn't – they didn't have historical data either, and so it's hard to tell. We do have surveys from previous points in time, and at least in the past decades, it might have increased a little bit the extent of switching across religious lines. Again, most of that is – among Protestants within, across Protestant denominations. But I don't know that is, Americans have always been religiously mobile, so to speak, to a large degree. So I'm not sure that I think that is, that there's much of an increase of it. There's a lot of it in American society. I'm not sure there's more of it than there was, say, 40, 50 years ago. On the Catholic guilt, I'd make a similar point on that, by the way. I think that report that you mentioned did an excellent job of documenting. It's, as you said, it's related to the religious knowledge question. The very low levels of religious knowledge among young people, even young people who are actively involved in various religious groups. But they also, I'm not sure that they documented really change over time. So I'm not sure whether the guilt is, is there less guilt than there used to be? I'm not sure we fully know that there's a real decline there. There's certainly low levels of it and maybe lower levels than we'd expect from, conventional wisdom or something. But I'm not sure that we actually have a documented change over time there.
Well, if I could sign off with another one that's probably not inside your purvey, is I wonder if the idea of Western movement and the way... some religions were involved in, I'm thinking Owen and New Harmony and sort of these utopian-based movements that were, some of which were religiously based, many of which were, whether, that had an important part to do with maybe the later mobility and just the character of American religiosity, too. It seems that manifest destiny is tied to the divine manifest or something. You will. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
All right. Well, I don't know. Is that something you feel like you can, you have some thought about?
It's an interesting. So, what it makes me think of, which I'm not sure this is directly responsive, but one of the interesting trends that I think we're at the beginning of that will be interesting to watch is the spiritual but not religious phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
This is not related to migration. It's more the kind of reference to some of those. Other groups made me think of this, the percentage of people who say yes, or rather no, I'm not religious, but yes, I am spiritual. And that does, it's still a small percentage of people who are in that particular intersection. Most people in American society, something like 80% say they're both religious and spiritual. But there does seem there's a minority, and it's gone up from something like 9% to something like 15% over the last decade. So it's still a minority, but it does seem to be going up, and it's highly correlated with age. That is, young people are much more likely to say this than others. The people who will say, "I'm not religious, but I am spiritual." So an interest in spirituality, but in conjunction with a resistance to. Probably what people mean by that is a resistance to organized religion or to traditional religion or something like that. And I think that's something to watch in the coming years, whether that continues to go up.
I do think that that's very interesting, and it seems that of all of the kinds of changes that we've talked about so far and the few that we haven't, that seems to be the – again, we're talking about something that's small and yet significant, and that seems to be one of the most significant changes, that is the growth in – that number, those people who say, yes, I believe in spirituality or think of myself as being a spiritual person, that does not necessarily translate into being someone who regularly attends religious services.
That's right, yeah. And that increase also, it's among the people who say they're not religious. That number is not going up because fewer people are saying they're religious than used to. That number hasn't much changed over time. The same number of people say they're religious or not. But among the people who say they're not religious, there's an increase in the people who say, "But yes, I am spiritual." So mm-hmm. that's something to watch.
Of all of the kind of things that have happened within the past few decades that have gotten attention, certainly in the popular press. It has been the growth within American Protestantism of people who identify as being conservative, and the shrinking of what are generally referred to as the mainline Protestant denominations, those who tend to be a little bit more liberal, and the growth of more conservative evangelical denominations. And sometimes this is talked about in terms of the growth in the one has come at the expense of the other, as if people were shifting. And I'm not sure exactly that is exactly true. It certainly is true that the number of conservative Protestants have increased, and particularly people who attend very, very large congregations. Again, these are the things that get our attention. What's really going on here, though, with this change within American Protestantism that also has this tie to politics?
Yes, it's a very important trend. Evangelical Protestants are growing in number, what we sometimes call liberal or sometimes mainline Protestants, meaning not evangelical or not explicitly evangelical Protestants, and the denominations affiliated with those traditions are declining as a relative proportion of the population. So that's a real trend, and it's an important trend. It is not happening because people are leaving mainline denominations and becoming evangelical, or it's not because people are leaving liberal denominations and switching to conservative denominations. There was an analysis by some sociologists, partly based at Berkeley a few years ago, that showed that about 85% of that trend is produced by different fertility rates between these two groups. That is, evangelical Protestants over the course of this last century, families have more kids than families of in mainline Protestantism. And I think the difference was about one, on average, one child per female, which doesn't sound like a lot, but over 100 years, that is you can get some pretty big differences in numbers. Evangelical Protestants also are better at hanging on to their kids than mainline Protestants are. And another very interesting dynamic is that it used to be that there was a tighter correlation between social class and denomination within Protestantism than there is now. So it used to be that as if people were upwardly mobile and maybe they were raised Pentecostal, but they would become upwardly mobile and become Methodist, or were raised Baptist and would become Methodist or Presbyterian or Episcopalian or something, because there was a respectability aspect to being Presbyterian or Episcopalian that there wasn't to being, say, Baptist. And that's just not true anymore, or it's not true to the extent that it used to be, which means that there's less switching out of conservative, more conservative groups into liberal groups with upward social mobility. And so that's part of the dynamic as well, is that the combination of the difference in fertility and the fact that conservative groups lose fewer people to switching out than they used to because of upward social mobility. And then throw in that evangelical groups are better at hanging on to their kids those are the three main forces behind this different fortunes over recent decades between evangelical and mainline or liberal denominations.
We have about 10 minutes left. We have several callers. We'll try to get them in the time that remains. Our guest, Mark Chaves, is professor of sociology, religion, and divinity at Duke University. He's interested in the sociology of religion. We're talking about what survey data tells us about American attitudes toward religion and religious practice, and how things have perhaps stayed very stable in many ways over the last few decades. And yet, as he has explained, there are some interesting changes. They may be subtle, but they're significant. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have someone here calling from Milford on a cell phone, line number 4. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I don't know how good of a connection I have. Can you hear me, Dave?
Yeah, just fine.
Yeah, okay, fine. I'll make it real quick because time is short. I happen to agree, very interesting show. I happen to agree with everything your guest said as far as the breakdown of the family and all that, the impact on religion itself. All I know is I was raised Roman Catholic on the south side of Chicago 1,000 years ago, and it was structure, and it was dogma, and it was ceremony, and it was terrifying. I can remember an 8-year-old boy getting ready to go into confessional to confess all these terrible sins, and I was like, what did I do? And likewise, I have a 7-year-old, and we go to church very rarely, Lutheran now, whenever we go, and she knows nothing of the Bible, and I'm just stating a fact here. But what I was going to ask is, very quickly, could you extrapolate this out if all the impacts and the social causes are true, and I believe they are, and I don't see them changing anytime soon. What's going to be the state of affairs 25, 30, 50 years out if we continue these trends and its impact on religion? And I'll go ahead and listen off air. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Well, I'm sure that is one of the questions that everybody wants to know. Is there a way to answer that?
It's very difficult. I think 25 or 30 years ago, the American religion will look much like it does now. Again, to the theme of there's a lot of continuity, and American religious institutions are very resilient, and they adapt with social changes over time. So I wouldn't expect to see dramatic decline over the next 30 years in, say, attendance at religious services. That's probably the single most commonly used indicator of kind of overall how much religion is happening is simply attendance at weekly worship services. And that number has been pretty – it probably declined from sometime in the 1950s up to about 1990, and it's been pretty stable since 1990 to the present. Maybe some very slight decline, but really pretty stable. At about 25% on any given weekend, about a quarter of Americans attend religious services. On the one hand, younger people attend religious services less than people of their age did in the previous generation. 30-year-olds today attend religious services less than 30-year-olds did 20 years ago. And you'd look at that and you'd say, well, okay, as those 30-year-olds become 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds, they will – how could that not push down overall religious attendance. However, countervailing that is that people do become more religious as they get older. And so we always have this push-pull in American religion, especially thinking of just kind of conventional, traditional participation in worship services at religious congregations on weekends. Is there are these cohort differences, but at the same time, as each cohort ages, it follows its own trajectory, but it's always up in terms of so. Another dynamic is that we have people live longer, and so the older, as the average age of the American population increases, the older people will keep the overall church attendance up as well for a while. And so there are countervailing forces that push in different directions, and it's very hard to know. I sometimes say I don't like to make predictions, especially about the future. We're much better at predicting and analyzing the past than we are about the future. So there are these countervailing forces, and it's very difficult to know which what the long-term underlying dynamics are.
All right. Let's talk with someone next in Urbana, line one. Hello? Yes?
Your mention of the rise of spirituality as opposed to organized religion brings to mind a question. If you go, it's usually thought of as in the past, Christianity was universal in the Western world. But if you go back to the beginning of the Enlightenment, through the 19th century, a very large part of the intellectual class, both Christian and Jewish, adopted deism. For instance, almost all of the founding fathers were deists, not Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the turn to spiritualism today is analogous or a continuation of this among the better educated young people today?
That's an interesting question. I think there are analogies and connections. I think there are similarities in that people seem to want to keep some concept or idea of a god of some sort, but are at least some percentage of the population doesn't want to be too specific about what that god is or who that god is or what how demanding that god is. And to the extent that that is deistic, I think that does describe a certain part of American religious culture. I think it does.
All right, one more caller here, line number two. This is someone in Champaign.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. There's, in terms of issues, whether your research picks up on these dimensions, one, in terms of social justice and the environment and war, does it pick up any of these at all or not?
Yes. One of the interesting trends that we see over the last 30 years is a tighter connection between being religious and being politically conservative and conservative on certain kinds of moral and social issues as well. So it's for example, political scientists sometimes just ask people, on a scale from 1 to 7, where 1 means you're very liberal and 7 means you're very conservative, where do you put yourself? It's always been true that religiously active people, regular church attenders, are more they're more conservative than people who aren't. But that number has increased over time. It's been true for as long as we've been measuring it that attitudes about homosexuality are correlated with religiosity. More religious people are less tolerant of homosexuality than. Less religious people. That's been true for a long time, but that difference has increased over time. So it does seem like one of the things that's happened over the last couple of decades is an increasingly tight connection between religiosity and political and some sorts of moral and social conservatism.
Now, what has the percentage of that increased, or can you?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it is. There's subtleties here. So, for example, I think it's on the order of 30% of regular church attenders will say, "Yes, I'm conservative, politically conservative," compared to about 16% of about twice as many. Religious service attenders will say, yes, I'm very politically conservative, than the percent of non-attenders who will say that. And that gap has increased over time. The homosexuality one is I think, interesting, and it's subtle in an interesting way. Both religious and non-religious people have become more liberal about homosexuality over time. Both groups are moving in the more liberal direction. The society as a whole is moving in a more liberal direction in terms of attitudes about homosexuality. Church attenders are moving in that direction more slowly than non-church attenders. And that produces a bigger gap between them in their attitudes about homosexuality, but they're both moving in the liberal direction. So sometimes this increasing connection means that one group's moving in the conservative direction, one group moving in the liberal direction, but attitudes of homosexuality, it's different. They're both moving in the liberal direction, but at different rates, which is, I think, an interesting subtlety.
We're going to have to stop there. I'm sorry. We could keep going, but we're going to have to finish with our thanks to Mark Chaves. He's professor of sociology, religion, and divinity at Duke University. He specializes in the sociology of religion. And Professor Chaves, thanks very much.
Thanks so much for having me.